their Limitless 2 model. Equipped with a 4K camera for stunning Ultra HD clarity, GPS with precision auto return, and up to 25 minutes flight time on a single charge. Visit DroneCloneExperts.com now and enter promo code RADIO to receive 15% off your entire order. That's DroneCloneExperts.com.
All right. Hey, guys. Scott here and Mike there. I know you didn't hear our intro music yet, but we're getting to that. But I want to make a little announcement before we get this show started. Mike, we are very happy to bring in a new sponsor to Verbal Shenanigans here.
Oh, boy. A new helper to the shenanigang.
Yes, yes. So we are bringing in a business that goes by the name of Drone Clone Experts. And essentially, it is a business that sells drones at a much cheaper price than you'll find kind of online. That makes them really reliable and affordable stuff. So I just want to say how happy we are to welcome Drone Clone Experts to the Verbal Shenanigans family, the shenanigang, if you will. So go check them out.
Those clones things are amazing. The drones and the cameras, like they're using it in NASCAR now to do coverage now that they don't have the Goodyear blimp, and it's amazing picture, it's amazing control. I'm pretty excited to try one of those out, Scotty.
Absolutely. Maybe one can follow you around the house and do just watch you for a day.
Well, just be hovering in one spot as I pet a dog.
That's
going to be...
But in 3D, Mike. In all...
Well, that changes everything, Scotty.
But we're very happy to welcome Matt and Drone Clone Experts to the show. Hopefully we'll be working with you guys for the foreseeable future. So go check out Drone Clone Experts. And now on to the show.
Okay, this is Michael Reynolds with Earthships, and you are listening to... Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Good evening, everybody, or good morning, or whenever you choose to listen to this. Welcome to the Verbal Shenanigans Podcast. Hopefully you're not sick of us during this pandemic. Mike, I think we were just talking right before we went on air. I think it was like episode like 18 of the pandemic.
Well, I mean, even if they're sick of us, where are you going? Gotcha.
Yeah,
you going to do? Have a conversation with your loved ones? Hell no. You're coming to Verbal Shenanigans for interviews and interesting banter. All right, start, Scott.
I like that you're taunting people that could easily just press the stop button on this podcast.
Don't tell them the key. Don't do that.
So you think right now people are sitting there staring at their phones or computers like, I don't know how to turn them off. They're just here for now.
They're like, you know, I hate these guys, but I really don't know how to hit the shuffle button. So
apparently our audience is 79 years and older. Huh?
Not necessarily. They could be people bed stricken who can't reach their phones. I mean, that's a positive right there.
Now, do you mean bedridden?
Bedstricken, bedridden, it's like not the same thing.
Like a bed just fell on them and they were struck by a bed.
Isn't bedstricken like...
Bedridden, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. The nurse has confirmed.
Bedstricken is a word?
Yeah, in your face. Yeah. Person who is not as good of a father as Darth Vader.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Now we're teaming up on you, Scott.
That's great. Our podcast ratings are dropping by the minute as we have this Darth Vader conversation. They're just falling apart.
I didn't even know we had ratings. Wow. Like Nielsen is connecting to our...
Well, they got nothing else to do. They got nothing else to do. So, you know,
everybody's bored.
I to be bed stricken definition, also to be brought to bed. Strick reverso dictionary.
That counts. I'm sorry.
I don't know, dude. Bed stricken. Yeah. All right. I'll give it to you, but it still sounds like beds falling on people is what it sounds like to me.
Berlew's English 1, All the other times, 312.
I'm trying to think of other words. See, I mean, you type in bed stricken, there's not a lot of Google results. Bedridden comes up.
I mean, I've always known it as stricken. So. Well,
it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me. I'm sure that was like an episode of The Dukes. Like, oh no, Boss Hogg is bed stricken.
He's bed stricken. He got a case of the strickens.
Oh, my God. He had an accident.
Go over to Cooter's to find the cure.
He had an accident in the jump, and now he's bed stricken.
Now Boss Hogg is trying to toss that bed out and take over the farm.
When you were like real deep in the Dukes of Hazzard as a kid, was it like a family like event like where you would watch it, or was it just like you would watch it in your room, like it was your thing?
Oh, it's a whole family. We'd be in the living room. Now, this is... I saw it when it was still running. So we're talking...
Right. Long time.
Early 80s. We're talking about... My memories are like 81, 82. So it'd be... You only had one television back then. You had your big... Little. Yeah, we had the big box and kind of talking and recording here while you're talking to me.
Yeah, it's just trying to figure out how a microphone works.
Yeah, see, the thing is, when voice comes out, it goes into this microphone and it records.
Is that how it works?
Yeah, so when you're talking while I'm talking, people are saying, what the hell is going on? Mm-hmm. Now, granted, even individually, they still ask that question. But in any case, yeah, I remember the big box. Like my brother would be in the living room. He'd have his, he'd be in a sleeping bag. My dad would be on his chair. I think I'd be sitting on the floor.
My mom was at the porno theater.
No. Grandma wasn't there during that time frame, but I do know mom was sitting on the couch. So
it was like the Burlews taking the, I pictured like a charcoal grill. And like your dad's like fixing the hot rod in the driveway, and he's like, "Oh crap, it's 8 o'clock!" And like sprinting in, and everybody coming from different directions in the house, like to unite in the living room for the Duke boys.
Like every person's in a different room. Oh no! And just like jumping out of windows trying to get to the TV.
Meanwhile, in the living room.
So basically, you envision the Burlews like the Simpsons couch gag.
Yeah. Like you're in the bathroom talking to yourself with your snow melter, and your dad's like in a field stealing nectarines. Mom is like dusting her Christmas albums, like that kind of thing. And everybody comes. Your brother's like looking up the price of paper towels, like. And I'm sorry, guys. Those are like four gigantically inside jokes. So I'm sorry for the listeners. But anyway, if you guys are tuning in, welcome back to the show. We got a good one today. Listen, we have done, me and Mike were just talking. We've done, I think, 18 episodes since the pandemic. We've been putting out two a week. So. It almost does a disservice to some of our, we've had some really amazing guests, and we have, we have two or three really, really cool ones lined up. Not counting today, but we got some really cool stuff coming on as we approach 300 episodes. So if you guys are just tuning in, basically this is what happens. We talk about life and, play stupid games and banter, and we have not gone without a guest in probably maybe 4 years. It's got to be at least 3 years.
If I recall, this was like a question during one of those quizzes for like our big episodes. Yeah. If I recall, it was episode 102, the last one that we did not have a guest on.
Wow. 102, so that is 198 episodes straight since we didn't have a guest. So, and many of those are multiple guests. So, what we're saying to you guys is that we pad our podcast with interesting people because, frankly, we don't really cut it. But thank you for those who are who are listening. I heard one of I was listening to Joe Rogan today, who just got paid a small sum, Berlew, of $100 million for his podcast.
It's good for him. Kind of surprised by that amount, but I guess if you pay $100 million and you have his whole catalog, I guess that works out because you have endless material. I think that's what mostly people are looking for in these buying stuff. Like when they pay $2 billion for WWE on Fox, you go, "Wow, that's crazy!" But I guess they're just looking for added resources and library to say, "Okay, yeah, I'm paying $2 billion, but I probably got 100,000 worth of hours of material to use at my whim," which is kind of good right now.
But it's amazing though, because that guy started. He was a name, obviously. He was Joe Rogan from Fear Factor and stuff like that, but
and news radio
and news radio. But his podcast was started like us, like just two guys like chatting away. He used to get like really really high back in the day and just like talk, and it was nothing like at all what it is today. And meanwhile, now this guy's gone on to interview everyone. I just listened to his episode. I was riding my bike. I was listening to his episode with Tony Hawk. It was really, really fascinating. And like, here's a guy who's basically taken that medium, the medium of podcasting, and put it into legitimacy. Like, it's like, holy crap. Like, why would I listen to the radio when I can listen to something like Rogan or Mark Maron or whoever it is, like where I could listen to my favorite people for hours rather than the stupid like 3-minute radio spot. I think that's dead. I don't think anyone's interested in short form. Like late night TV is even trying to like figure out how to keep people like, I don't know. I have Mike Berlew or like, you know, on the show, and I have 4 minutes of canned questions. You know, back in the day where that was the only way you get access to these people, yeah, it makes sense. But now you're like, I follow you on Instagram. I see all your movies. I know what's going on. I know the minute you sign a thing. I can Google your movie. Like, no one wants like these. I don't know, pre-recorded ads. People want to get to know you. You know, like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, it is a changing dynamic in many ways. Like, I don't even think anymore they care about the actual ratings when these late night shows go on at night. They're more worried about the YouTube numbers and items like that. So it's, and even like you hear from me, like you can tell, like Letterman, you can tell he's a little disgusted by what late night has become. He feels like they're not talking to these people. They're more worried about the cute bits and everything like that,
playing accordion.
Kind of true. I mean, there's very limited like interviews anymore. Like, I mean, you can debate the best interviewer right now is Howard Stern.
Yep. Oh, I interviewers, I would put like, I don't know, there's probably more, but I would say Howard Stern, Joe Rogan, and Mike Francesa, as far as when it comes to sports. That is the only reason Mike Francesa is like very tolerable and respected, because his interviews are phenomenal. Like, he does his homework and he asks hard questions, and I mean, he's a total douche. We all know that, douche, but he's a fantastic interviewer. And it's like,
is he still going? Was he going to retire again? Or
it's so funny because here in our area, we know that, you know, WFAN is like a, so he's come back now like 4 times in different iterations. Like, he was doing a Sunday morning show. Then he was doing something. He was creating his own app. The next thing, now he's doing like 6:30 to 7:30. He's doing like an hour a day. Like, he was never ready to retire. I think it's just him playing the business game with them over and over again. And then they're saying, well, you know, you do bring in a bazillion listeners because people have been following you for 30 years. It's like this back and forth. And he does keep showing up on WFAN for an hour, 3 hours, Sunday mornings, afternoon show. He's still going. I don't know.
But I mean, you think it's more he's bored, or he didn't comprehend exactly he overestimated his worth.
Yeah.
Because I know the reason he came back the second time was basically his app wasn't doing anywhere close to what he thought it would, but ironically, he sold it for like probably 20 times more than it was worth.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I think WFAN has a relationship with him, and I think he's got like a comfortableness with them. Like he wants to be like, he's not ready to give it up. I think that's what it comes down to. He's not ready to give up the terrestrial radio, the drive time, like whatever it is, the call-ins and stuff like that. And I don't think he's going to get the same thing from the app. So
I wonder if terrestrial will start moving like kind of like cable and stuff, where they're just going to open up things. I mean, I think that's what kind of made podcasts move forward versus terrestrial radio, was just the fact that it's like, all right, I can drop an F-bomb over here. I can talk about whatever I want on here. I mean, it's almost silly now, to the point where it's like, we got the 3-second delay because their curse word might be said. I mean, literally, there's shows on like sci-fi at 11 o'clock at night. They are dropping F-bombs every 2 minutes. Yep. So whatever the rules were, it's no longer available anymore.
And I also think there's a difference between language and content, right? Like if I drop a couple F-bombs and I'm talking about my family, you know, like I'm just talking about my, like if I'm going deep into like, you know, really descriptive, nasty situations, that's different. Like I think content, like I'm so, if you're an adult and you're offended by actual language, like hearing curse words and stuff like that, I think it's kind of, it's like, dude, are you a Puritan? You know, like what are we doing here? It's okay. Like words, and you're right. Like you see FX, all of them are just, even like Always Sunny, I noticed, which I watch every year, like they started like increasing the amount of like F-bombs they're putting in and stuff like that.
It's
just the
funny
fact that we have to say F-bomb, it just shows you. Like that's, I feel so stupid saying, you know, the F-bomb.
The F-word, yeah. I'll never forget, like when I was going to high school, we had a substitute teacher come in, and it was like an English class where they were reading some like story or whatever, going over something, and it was, I think it was like one of them Greek tragedies, you know, like the messed up stories, like, you know, the brother sleeps with the mother or something crazy like that. And I remember, like, after she read it, like one of the people in the class went, damn. And she's like, if you say that one more time, you're going to the principal's office. And it was almost like a sitcom. Everybody started looking around. We're all looking at each other, and the same person, he's like, what, damn? And she's like, that's it. Go to the principal's office right now. And the kid goes out, and everybody's still looking at each other because we're still kind of dumbfounded by what occurred. And somebody, as sitcomming as it sounds, somebody's like, hey, what the hell? And she's like, it feels like that again.
No, I picture like
you're not even a real teacher.
I picture like
not even a real teacher.
Key and Peele doing something with that, you know? Like
it was so something like you would totally just see some writer do it for like TGI Friday sitcom kind of bit thing. But, like, I think the kid got suspended for a day for saying damn and all. I even remember going home. I'm like, is damn technically a curse word? And they're like, well, yeah. But I'm like, nobody enforces that rule.
Yeah. I mean, like, listen. Like I said, there's a big difference between content and language. And I think they get thrown under the same, you know, like, warning. Mature language. But, listen, mature language, as opposed to like showing kids scenes of like people sleeping with each other, I think that's way worse. You know, like, and I don't know. I'm having a kid in a couple months. Like, I don't care if he comes home and he says, you know, damn by mistake. I'm like, hey, we don't say that in this house, and that's the end of it. Like, for people to like be offended by that in 2020? It's like, come on, man. Like, we had so many other things to worry about. Like, I don't know.
Well, even if you look at now you can see a bare butt on regular cable channels. Like, they'll say nudity, and you can see a woman's rear or guy's rear, mostly guy's rear. So
I love that you just...
like, well, we don't want to look sexist, so let's put a man's butt up there.
you just sound like my grandpa. Like, yeah, you can hear, you can see a bare butt on that.
Back in my day, we were allowed to look at the butts.
You couldn't see bare butts. You could even see a man's bare butt, his rear.
I remember, like, Daddy, can I see a woman's butt? He's like, absolutely not. God won't let you see a woman's butt, you damn stupid hell kid.
Burlew, we can take you out of the country, but we can't take the country out of Burlew, man.
Exactly.
But before we segue to our guest, speaking of listening to Rogan with Tony Hawk, one of our former guests was mentioned on the Joe Rogan podcast today, Dave Kalama, who was a big wave surfer. Tony Hawk was talking about surfing waves with him and stuff like that. So it was pretty damn cool. I'm like, hey, we had him on our show, and no one heard me. And I realized I was on my bike by myself. But, you know.
Hi, Joe Rogan Hotline. I just want to call up and let him know that we talked to the same person you just talked about.
I think we've had Zoltan was on Rogan, right? Zoltan was on Rogan. So we've had a couple people. We're basically like Rogan. We're like the, double A Rogan.
Yeah, we're like Rogan outside the missing the 1/10 of $1 billion.
Yeah, we're very far away from that 1/10 mark. But
keep on adding zeros to the bottom number of that fraction, and you'll eventually get to us.
But let's get to our guest. So a couple of weeks ago, I was watching. I was just scrolling through Amazon Prime, and I came across a documentary called Garbage Warrior. And the documentary was, I don't know. I know, Mike, you watched it, but it was probably like 8-9 years old, something like that. And the title sounded very interesting, and I dove into it. First few minutes, I'm like, I don't know. And I stuck with it. I'm very glad I stuck with it because I found it to be a very fascinating, interesting documentary all about basically this guy Mike Reynolds, and he's building these, basically building his own homes that are completely green, completely like no waste, no energy cost and everything. It's a really phenomenal documentary, and the way it went, I didn't see it going. So I know you saw the documentary too, right, Mike?
Yeah, yes, it did. It was very good. As a side note, it was in 2007, this documentary.
Oh, wow. Even longer than I thought. So 13 years. Mm-hmm. Wow. So I was kind of fascinated by it. And he builds these things called Earth ships, which are basically houses that are able to be self-sufficient and green and everything else. And I highly recommend it. So I was able to get in touch with Mike Reynolds. So let's get Mike Reynolds on the line. So, Mike, first off, I want to thank you for giving us a few minutes here. It's kind of been some interesting times going on in this country, so it's nice that you're able to give us a few minutes here. So I want to thank you first before we chat.
Okay.
So, Mike, I guess how I basically – I found you – I was putzing around Amazon Prime the other day and came across Garbage Warrior, and – I was really inspired by it, and I thought it was a really good documentary. So that's going on maybe about, over 10 years ago.
It's about 11 years ago.
11 years ago. So I guess we could work our way back towards that, but like how have things changed with you kind of since that time? I know, by the end of the film, you were having a hard time getting laws passed, but then you were helping out in storm-ridden areas and whatnot. What's changed since then?
Well, actually, if you look at it in a nutshell, nothing's changed.
Okay.
We've gotten more things. you know, things are evolving, things are moving in a direction. But it's still what it is, which is we live on a planet that is choking itself with its own hands, and hopefully we're going to faint before we die. And then things will be okay.
Right.
Everything's just gotten more intense. There's more sewage being dumped into rivers and streams, more ridiculous energy things, like the whole, I think, the Japanese meltdown happened after Garbage Warrior. And I've seen more sewage dumping into rivers and streams and more ridiculous amounts of wires in cities over your head. And so it's all that has just caused me to dig in harder and deeper and go harder trying to make these things happen, because the thing that goes with that, I guess, is that we're getting better at it. I mean, we've been doing it for 50 years. A chimpanzee could get good at something in 50 years. So we've gotten better at doing this, and the world keeps getting in worse and worse shape, and we got something that works now.
Yeah.
And we're getting it out there for humanitarian and absolutely people that don't have any money, as well as your typical Chevy Nova, Toyota Corolla people, as well as your high-end luxury people. We're doing it on every scale from free to $10 million, and it's needed everywhere. That's the common denominator. We are really pushing the awareness of six human issues that every city, village, and town must address, and that is comfortable shelter that doesn't use fossil fuel. Everybody needs that. Everybody needs water. Everybody needs electricity. Everybody needs a self-contained on-site treatment of their liquid waste, their sewage, rather than taking it to a municipal treatment center and putting it in the Hudson Bay or whatever.
Yeah.
And everybody needs to learn to do something with the garbage that they produce, and everybody needs food. Those six things are what we're trying to do all over the world on any scale, any level, any financial strata.
Now, right.
So we're improving. Gotcha.
Now, how have things changed as far as your, I guess, community when you, I know the documentary kind of left off where you, things weren't passed and you were having problems, you know, to build all sorts of infrastructure to get to the various houses and the people who helped and worked with you. How have things changed there? Are you guys still having to go through red tape and whatnot, or has that been resolved?
Well, no, red tape will never be resolved.
Yeah.
you know, it's like it keeps coming back. So, like we got out of red tape only to get into a different color of red tape. So
crimson red tape.
The red tape is a human phenomena. And you, if you try to get out of red tape, you're going to get frustrated. So we are developing sort of, I guess you would call it magical ways of transcending red tape. And the reason I say that is because, you know, I have fought it. I fought the law, and the law won. I tried to make a law, and I got it passed, and I got 4 years. The governor finally signed it, and it passed Senate and House. Right. And I got it. And then when I got the law, it was too little too late, and I saw that method of getting in with the law is just as – it made me want to vomit. I mean, it was just – getting in with the lawmakers and seeing the wasted human energy that it takes to get one little teeny fart of a law out there is just ridiculous. Mm. And so that I can't blame anybody for that. That is our system that we as humans have developed. So I've had to come up with, you know, I've tried everything, and what I'm using now, and it seems to work, is transcending the law. One of the basic graphic techniques of transcending the law would be like, if you have a dog and it has worms, and your vet tells you, here's some worm pills, you put one in the dog's throat, hold its muzzle shut, massage its throat, and try to make it swallow it. Well, I've done that, and the dog spits up the pill, bites you, spits all over your hand, or if it does act like it swallowed it, it spits it up later. it doesn't work. So what you do to get a dog to take a worm pill is you take the worm pill and wrap it up in a little nicely tight packed ball of hamburger.
You throw it sounds familiar. Yeah.
At the dog, and he catches it in midair and whoops it down, pill and all. So we wrap all of our ideas for the future in hamburger, for the real world, for the powers that be, for the law, for the regulations. We give them what they want, and we disguise what we know is necessary within that, and that does seem to be working. And in some cases, you know, we can that works, but it's getting better even because people are getting more and more desperate and scared, and it's filtering into the regulators and the officials and everything. And we have this method that works, but in some cases we don't even need that. Like, you know, we just did an airship, full board airship in France, and they love it, and it's changing things over there. We just did another one in Japan even more recently, and that's causing people to go, oh my God, I didn't know this was possible. So it's working in that respect. Things are evolving and moving. Are they moving as fast as the ice is melting in the poles? I don't think so. But at least we're getting some movement.
Interesting. Now, I'm curiosity, like when you were going through all these hassles with New Mexico, I mean, obviously you went to other countries, you brought up a couple others that were in the documentary. Did you ever thought of, like, you know, forget this, I'm going to go to another state that's maybe more red or blue, or go to another country that's going to listen, versus continually fighting the battle in New Mexico?
Oh, yeah, I did that. I went to Colombia, up in the hills and mountains, where nobody cared what I did. I went to a place called, we call it Airship Island, out in the middle of the islands of Indonesia. And we showed up there with 100 people and had to carve out a life. It was all these great experiences. But in both, you know, in Colombia, you got to worry about being crucified by the cartels. In Indonesia, the government is somewhat corrupt, and we got held for ransom, and I had to do hostage negotiation for 2 weeks and pay a lot of money to get my interns out of there. So when you look at the overall thing on the world, why, actually, U.S. is no worse than any place else. It's finding the proper place in the U.S. And so I've still got land out in the middle of nowhere in New Mexico, and it's so far out in the middle of nowhere. I'll tell you what we're going to do, and it's going to work for a while. We're not taking vehicles to this land. We're going to go in by drone or on foot and start building. We're going to start building a little village that we're calling Rivendell, like the Lord of the Rings, the Elfin Village. Actually, we're doing one of them in Puerto Rico right now. It's just beautiful. And no codes, no regulations, nobody telling us what to do, no certified subdivision. All these things crippled a lot of the momentum and strength of what we do, but it still comes through. So we're going for the transcending situation, as well as out in the boonies with not leaving a track. No building inspector is going to come there because there's not going to be any road there. I don't think building inspectors are going to come in on a drone.
Yeah.
So I bet we've got a decade before we could get in trouble. And by then it'll be too late, you know? So, we'll be so far along, and I'm not going to do anything that wouldn't pass codes as the codes evolve. I'm not going to do anything that's going to fall down or anything like that. I just figure we do not have time to fart around begging and pleading and bribing and all this crap. I need to wake up in the morning and know what I want to do and go do it. Just like that.
Love it.
And that's the way we will get something built out in the middle of the Mesa of New Mexico with nobody in our way. We got the funding. We can deal with, we can do it.
Now, Mike, I want to take a step kind of backwards for people who are listening and kind of let you explain. So you have this background in architecture, And you kind of, I wanted to ask you, one, did you always have the idea to almost rebel in a way against architecture and improve it as far as making it green and sustainable? And also, can you explain to like the audience exactly, like if they haven't seen the film, what an Earthship actually is?
Well, let me start with what an Earthship actually is. An Earthship, after all this time and after 50 years of going in this direction, an Earthship is a vessel. I don't call it a house. It's a vessel that we build on this planet to sail on the seas of tomorrow. And what I mean by that is that it will address the six things that every human must have to deal with. Every village, every town, every city has got these six things. And it is comfortable shelter that doesn't need fossil fuel. It is water. It is electricity. It is treating and dealing with your own sewage. Your own shit on your own site doesn't go anywhere. You take care of it. As a matter of fact, I look at it as gold because we turn it into nutrients for plants. And then your own garbage, which is something we invented. So why don't we deal with our own rather than taking it to waste management and having the dumpsters and all of that. And then food. Everybody has to deal with those six things. If you don't deal with one of them, you're in trouble. You know, if you don't deal with water, what good's a $10 million house if it doesn't have water? So you have to, as a human, you have to deal with those things. An Earthship is the vessel that deals with those things for us. And it is an invention. It is a machine that deals with those six things. It is not a house hooked up to the grids.
Gotcha.
And that's what an Earthship is. Now, what was the other question?
The other question was about your early days in architecture as you got into it. Did this idea, like these ideas, come to you kind of after getting into architecture, or did you go into architecture already knowing these sustainable ideas were what you wanted to do?
Well, no, I started, sort of fell into architecture because I was good at drawing and good at building.
Okay.
I've been building with my dad since I was 12 years old, so I know how to work. We hand dug a basement under a 4-room shotgun house. That broke me in on work, believe it. And so then I went on into architectural school and ended up, everything plays its part. I didn't have the money to go to school. My dad was a milkman. And so the University of Cincinnati had a great school, and they let you, after your freshman year, they let you work 3 months and go to school 3 months. And they placed you in architectural firms all over the country and even in Europe. And so by the time I graduated 6 years later, I had worked in many architects' offices, even in London and all over the U.S. And I knew then, after being in architects' offices, that I did not want to be an architect in that sense of the word. I didn't want to make big boxes that are on budget and same details over and over and just be an impotent builder of boxes. I ended up seeing that architecture could be and should be more as I slowly became aware of it through the news media, the energy problems, the garbage problems, the sewage problems, the water problems. And I related all these to humans. And I said, we're building houses for humans. Let's address these problems. This all happened over 50 years. It wasn't a light bulb that came on all at once. So maybe two decades ago, I realized what I was doing. And maybe as late as a decade ago, I attributed these 6 points to it. And now we have a definite product. And we do it on every scale all over the world. And our effort is not a franchise, not to make $1 billion. Our effort is to make this kind of vessel available, only if they want it, but they want it, to every man, woman, and child on this planet, make it accessible to them. And we're going to any extreme we can to do that.
That's awesome.
What I know in the documentary you talked about, like, you got a lot of pushback from architects in particular. Just out of curiosity, is it more of, well, that's a wild and crazy idea? Was it, it's going to take away finances? Was it just they just thought it wasn't going to work?
No, they just, see, garbage is garbage, and shit is shit. Nobody wants shit and nobody wants garbage. But I'm running sewage through the living room and I'm building out of garbage. So what are we talking about here? We're talking about an idiot, and we don't want him in our architectural community. You're a disgrace. So I lost my license. I'm breaking every rule in the book in terms of building and architecture and codes.
Yeah.
And if you're doing that and it's totally flat out immediately successful, well, they're going to lend a different ear to it. But if you make some mistakes along the way, and I did, then you're already black and getting blacker, and you're a criminal. And that's what this thing did. By getting into this way, with just trying to do it and doing it with clients and trying to push the envelope, I got in all kinds of trouble. And I mean, but at the same time, it was there was trouble, but there was not trouble. And so the two together, I would get served on the same plate every day. In other words, I call it getting served raspberries and dog shit on the same plate every day. And it's true. Like the day I came back from Santa Fe, from relinquishing my architects and contractors license because they said I had to. They said, this is your only way out. Otherwise we can penalize you to the point where you'll never recover. And so I was coming back. I was kind of sick. It was rainy. I was depressed, obviously, because I gave away my architect's license and I busted my ass to go through school and get it and pass the tests and everything.
For sure,
so I'm coming back. I'm all sad. I get into my office and the Hayden House Publishers out of London had sent us a big coffee table, hardback coffee table book. And it was called The 100 Best Houses in the World or something like that. And one of my recent houses was in it. So I'm like, what the hell? Am I an incompetent loser? Or am I in with the top 100 houses, architects in the world, whatever? So I just got to the point where nothing good gets me too elated and nothing bad gets me too depressed. I just keep doing it.
That's great. So, you know, when we scheduled this interview and I've been thinking about, you know, just your, I wanted to hear your thoughts on things. So you have something like, you know, this pandemic. So immediately I start thinking about, you know, hospitals and things like that. With your like visions and the way you make houses, do you have visions on how you can make things such as like hospitals like that more almost in line to your houses and whatnot, where they produce less waste and they're able to kind of function in a more environmentally friendly way? Like, how would you, do you have ideas for that too?
Oh yeah. This concept is not limited to housing.
Right.
It can be, it's building, any building,
mm-hmm.
any building needs to address those things. And so, yes, school, we've done a few schools.
Okay.
The kids love them. And, we did a school in Uruguay, a school in Argentina, a school in Sierra Leone, a school on Easter Island. We've done a lot of schools, and it's just the same thing. The building needs to be addressing these things, and we do it in a school format, and we'll do it on any level.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Now, one of the things I got a good chuckle about, like on the, in the documentary, was how you talked about how you guys have to try to experiment to do different things where the land's at, and how a little off on some windows to gain solar energy ended up with a guy having a typewriter that was melted down. Just out of curiosity, like when you do this experiment, you're like, okay, we're a little off. Is that something that would be easily adjustable? Or you're like, all right, we can just move it to a certain degree, or is that just pretty much, all right, we got to start from the beginning again?
No, on that particular house, we changed the angle of the front face. And in other words, back when we did that house, all we were trying to do was make the building so it didn't need heat. And, you know, when you're using a new tool, and that was the sun in this case, there's a learning curve. And so we were getting buildings so that they'd make it through the winter without fuel, but in the summer they were too hot. So we had to go through a few years of learning how to make the building both stay cool in the summer and warm in the winter. And that took a lot of evolution. So there's a bunch of factors of physics that must be designed into the building. It doesn't matter what any codes or regulations or tradition or convention tells you, to hell with all of that. We have to make this machine stay cool in the summer and warm in the winter with no fuel. That's the assignment. And so that itself takes its toll on the design and the codes and the convention and the tradition. And then put that together with electricity done a different way, water, catching water from the sky rather than just making it run off the roof, treating your sewage on site with your building, and eating and consuming garbage from your town and growing your own food. I mean, hell, right now, these earth ships are showing us that we are in the right direction, because I'm walking down my hallway in my airship. I've got peas, I've got tomatoes, I've got parsley, I've got grapes, I've got bananas, I've got tangerines. I can stay alive. I don't have to wait in no food line, money or not. I can stay alive. And so, I mean, I can literally stay alive. So these things are showing me, as we go into one of our pandemics, one of our global crises that we're going to be seeing from now on. And I'm seeing, here's the first chance for Earth ships to show me, and they are doing it.
Yeah. I was curious to see, because the documentary, like, I kind of had no clue going in. You know, I found it fascinating about your personal Earth ships and the community. And then it kind of, you know, when you went and helped in the hurricane, the tsunami that had happened, do you find that areas that, you know, in America, we have such obsession with excess and then you go to an area like that and you're building these things out of tires and bottles for people who haven't seen, and using materials you know, a lot of people would never think twice of. Do you find in an area like that, people are just way more open to your ideas and also way more grateful for the idea of living off the grid like that?
Yes, that is a growing crescendoing phenomena. People are seeing that each one of these aspects, each one of these six things, when they start seeing that inertia, and then, you know, they've been listening to the news for the last 5 years, they're going, wait a second, this is far more secure than any government or corporation or even money. You know, people are getting Earthships just so they know they've got electricity. They know they've got water. They know they've got food. Huh. No politic, no government is able to do that. Well, I take that back. Every government almost would be able to do that, but they have to get past power and money first. Okay. And they're not going to do that.
Right.
No government is going to get past power and money. And throw in tradition and culture with it, and you've got a giant, giant wall between people and sustenance.
Do you regret not being a little more selective with bringing people in, which kind of pushed things where it went to more going into law, what you were doing, like the people were complaining about the certain temperatures and so forth? It just seemed like something that'd be more, if you could get like more hippie like people versus people who had a bunch of money and says, yes, this sounds cool, I'll take this.
Well, the thing is, humanity is a phenomena, and I had to learn to ride that phenomena, just like I had to learn to encounter the sun properly, encounter the rain properly, encounter physics and biology properly. I've got to learn, and I'm still learning, how to encounter humanity, because, you know, you've got to know what you can give them and what you can't, and in what doses, to avoid getting crucified or sued. You know, you have to know the nature of humanity, and I'm starting to learn that. And basically, you know, we're looking at Earthships as maybe how you bring in the deserts of Africa, in the you know, when the drought season is coming on and your last pond is still remaining from the monsoons, all the animals come to it, the elephants, the tigers, the zebras, the antelope, Every animal comes to this pond because they all need water. So I'm trying to make this be unarguable. So it's so unarguable that people come to it and accept it. And as long as I don't promise anything that I can't deliver, it can work, you know. And there's no way I cannot, you know. I've been accused of using humanity as guinea pigs. Well, yeah.
Right.
I mean, how else can I get? You can't test a house unless people can live in it. And so one thing I have done is I spec houses, and I let people live in them. I let people rent them as nightly rentals, Airbnb, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Then I collect up any complaints, and then I evolve that out of it. That is a hell of a lot better way than having a client. I don't like clients that much. I'll do one here and there, but now I do houses after they're proven and people have lived in them and say they love it. Then I sell it. And our guest books in these rental houses used to say things like, you know, a decade ago, they'd say, wow, I really appreciate this. Could be improved, that I didn't like that, whatever. Now they're just going, holy shit, God bless you. I can't believe this is possible.
That's awesome.
And so we're learning.
That's great. Mike, I could talk to you for hours, but you know, it just, there's so many questions I have of you, but I guess I will let you go on this clip. I have one question left. You know, you've had so many great, you've built so many amazing things. You continue to, you have a really kind of clear, concise message. You know, and you see setbacks and you see people who, you know, you see just culturally, you know, the environment getting ignored and more. Are you able to stay positive and able to, and what keeps you kind of moving forward, and where do you see your vision going in the future here? Like, are you able to stay, you know, with a glass half full mentality?
Yeah. I mean, I like to do this. It's an adventure. It's a journey. It's fun. I like it. I mean, like say, look at a gold mine and you've discovered a vein and you keep following that vein and hacking through the granite or hacking through the whatever, to the crystal quartz or whatever, to get to that vein. It's a lot of work. It's a tremendous amount of work, but the vein keeps getting bigger. Now, what gold miner is not going to keep after a vein that keeps getting bigger, no matter how much work, no matter how hard it is? So, yeah, I keep going, and I keep positive, and a margarita here and there doesn't hurt.
Right.
It's just there's no way I'm going to stop doing this. And it just keeps getting better.
Yeah. Well, Mike, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I really like a lot of what you stand for. And I think the documentary does a really good job of introducing, you know, some of the amazing concepts you have, from even just something as simple as the tires. I thought was like just a pretty amazing concept that I think no one really thinks about. And I think you have a very powerful message. If people want to go check out your work or see, kind of get more of an idea of what you do and what the Earthships do, where's the best place for them to go?
Well, we have two websites, earthshipbiotexture.com and earthship.com. Those pretty much guide people to everything we're doing. We have an app, and you can get the app and get a lot of information. We have an academy. We have an online academy, but this is all on the websites, earthship.com, earthship one word, and earthship biotexture. That's biotexture like architecture, biotecture. Earthshipbiotexture.com tells everything, and so does earthship.com.
Mike, thank you so much for giving us a few minutes of your time, and stay safe and keep doing what you're doing.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Mike Reynolds. I think, Mike, you should start to build your own house in the backyard. I think that's what you need to start doing.
I mean, I got some things laying around in the house right now. I guess, let's see, I got a mop handle. I got some
very green
shoe boxes over there. I got some old football cards that probably are worth $0 right now.
Yeah, what do you do with cards? I have boxes of cards at my mom's, and I can't find any of me to just chuck them in the garbage can.
And that's the thing. It's like, I have them. I know there's probably close to zero possibility that any one of them in there are worth anything of note, but there's nothing in my body that will allow me to open up that garbage can and chuck them in there.
I know, it's tough. I have a couple of binders with like hockey cards, like all organized, like, you know, by team and stuff like that. I can't find anything to just like toss it in the garbage can.
I think I'm still scarred from my grandma who stole my baseball cards at one time where I'm like, no, I can't get rid of these. I lost a set before when they were worth money.
You need to retell the story. It's probably been 4 years since you've told the story on the podcast.
Oh, easily. So, obviously, during the 80s where baseball cards were aplenty and worth a lot of money, I remember I had an aunt who gave me a bunch of her old baseball cards. And this is back in the days where you could get a book where it would tell you the price.
Beckett, right?
I think it was Beckett or Topps put out a book every year where it's like, this is what your card's worth in mint condition, good, great condition, good condition, all that. And I remember I had a rookie Don Mattingly card, and I put all my quote-unquote highest price cards into a binder.
Yep.
Sorted it out.
Do you think kids still have that joy of like the Beck? There was something about getting that Beck. The one I remember is like Beckett magazine. I think it was Beckett, and it would have like exactly like all the cards, the names, just going through lists, like what it's worth. But there's something really enjoyable about that. Now, like I was saying the other day with the the dickering challenge. Like, there's something about like the magic of making money out of nothing.
Absolutely.
I don't know what it is, but it's something ingrained in us. Maybe it's like the American way, I guess, the dream, you know, like starting from nothing and having this golden ticket to get you to the top.
Well, people love telling that story of like, oh, I was at a garage sale and I saw this and I'm like, oh, I got to have it. How much? And somebody's like, oh, it's a quarter. And it's like, oh, that dates back to the 1800s. Yeah. And
all those shows, all those shows we were talking about the other week, the Pawn Stars, the American Pick. It's all about finding some junky thing and it being worth a bazillion dollars.
Yeah, and that's why people buy up those storage bins and are shocked. Wait a minute, you mean I don't have a $200,000 in here like the people on the TV show?
Yeah, right.
But getting back to my story, so I remember I get organized and everything and going up to my parents and everybody in the family, like, hey, look, I got this car, and I looked in the book. It's worth this and that and blah, 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 and
right.
Show my grandma, and she's like, oh, that's so nice. And 1 or 2 days later, I'm looking around, can't find it anywhere. I mean, okay. And I knew exactly where I had it.
And this is the Mattingly card, right?
No, and the entire book was gone.
Book, yes.
Yeah, and you know, I knew it was in my closet on the side on the floor. Wasn't there. You know, I looked in the basement. I looked everywhere. I usually am. And for the life of me, I couldn't find it. And I mean, I wasn't like bawling or anything, but it was just one of those things where it's like, how can I be this stupid? Where did it go? I had no thought about somebody grabbed my cards and went away with them. So right. I still had other ones available to me. So it sucked, but it wasn't the end of the world. Fast forward, I would say probably 3 or 4 years later, my grandmother passed away.
Right. Is this the same grandma that you told us went to the adult theaters?
Yes. My mom's mom.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
So, like, my grandma passed away. You know, everybody's going through the hardship. We're cleaning out her room in the house. And just, like, as, like, a throwaway statement, it's like my dad turned to me. He goes, oh, by the way, your grandma was the one who stole your baseball cards. And the story is, basically, she had a boyfriend at the time who was also into baseball cards, probably, like, a 75-year-old man. And her gift to him was to steal her grandson's baseball cards and hand it over to him. And apparently, like, even my dad, I don't know if he referenced it directly to her or something to that effect, but the way my dad put it, he said something to the effect of, yes, I even said to her how wrong that was or something. So it's like, I guess everybody in the family knew except for me.
Now, when this happened, okay, so give us a little background into, like, your grandma and your feelings towards your grandma pre, like the normal average feelings towards your grandma. Were you close with her? Was she a spitball? Like, was she a spitfire? Was she kind of like the kind of person that would do this? Or was this completely out of the blue?
Well, I mean, my grandma lived with us. My sister had to share a room with her. It was like we had six people in the house, three bedrooms. So the parents had the one bed. My brother and I had a bunk bed in our room. And my sister had to share a room with my grandmother. She was basically out every night. Like, she worked at a local restaurant in the area called the Flag Post, and she would literally be out pretty much every night. So I don't have a ton of memories of her. I don't want to say I had any angst against her, but I also won't say that I was like super close. Oh, I love you, grandma.
Okay.
It's kind of in the medium where it's like, yeah, you're part of the family and you'll joke around and stuff like that, but like, there was nothing where it's like, but grandma's my best friend.
But don't bring your Honus Wagner card around her. She'll snatch that right up.
Yeah, like, the biggest things I can remember of my grandma was pretty much, I remember some arguments I had with her. Like, I remember the good cable box was upstairs. Like, it was the quote, the black box where you can get to the cable shows or whatever.
The Spice Network. Yep.
Yeah. Well, not even like that, but even like HBO and all that stuff. Yep. But like, she would come home at like 11 o'clock at night and it's like, I want to watch the news. And it's like, well, I'm watching something I can only watch here. And she would go, she would play a game where it's like, if you don't give me the TV, I'm going to wake up your dad and you're going to be in trouble.
Ooh, yeah.
And it's kind of like, well, there's a perfectly good TV downstairs where you can watch it. It wasn't like a freezing basement or anything like that. It was
grandma, get down in your cave.
Get down in there. It's 30 degrees down there. Yeah, you'll like it.
Yeah, we made it warm tonight. We made it warm tonight.
Get used to that. When you steal, you go downstairs. But in any case,
watch out for the rodents. Bye, Grandma. Good night.
It was one of those, like, she would just pull that, and it's like, even like having a conversation with Dad, I'm like, I don't understand. Like, I'm not preventing her from doing anything, but she's preventing me and all that. So she kind of had like some kind of a little bit of a power trip. And I also kind of remember, like my dad pointed out, like, she was never the, hey, I'll cook something for you guys, or I'll give you guys, since I'm living in your house, I'll give you a little money so the kids can go get pizza or something like that.
Right.
She was pretty much, she lived in the house. She was a family member, but she wasn't really a family member, I guess would be the best way to put it.
Yeah. So she steals your, you find out she takes your cards post death of her.
Yeah.
What feelings rise up? Are you just pure mad? Are you shocked? Like, what goes on there?
I remember like one weird thing about, like, as they were cleaning out her stuff, it's, they had like a picture of her making out with a person. They're like, don't show Mike.
What?
I'm like, what?
Wait,
I don't know if it, I don't think it's like tongue or anything, but she was like kissing, I guess, her boyfriend or something, whatever. There was a picture of her and they're like, oh, Mike can't see this. I'm like, I'm not that young. I think I was like 12 at the time. And It was like a weird thing where it's like, no, I want to see grandma kissing her
like,
guy.
If they just showed like, you just go into like this nuclear meltdown. Like, no, I cannot see grandma kissing a man. Like just tossing the house apart. There must have been a reason they didn't want you to see that.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. It was like a weird excursion. Like
every time, weird feeling. Every time your mom kissed your dad, you would just light something on fire. They're like, please don't show this to Mike. last time we
started the arsons because they do the evil lip dance.
Last time I kissed you in front of Mike, we lost the first floor of the house.
But, you know, you're going through, like, weird feelings anyway because it was sad and all.
Of course.
Like, I was going through a weird thing where, like, I wasn't sure. Like, I remember how she passed away. Like, my parents went somewhere. So it was only me and her in the house.
Right.
And I was watching TV in the other room. And I somewhat remember asking, Grandma, are you okay? And didn't get a response. I'm like, okay, she's sleeping, and going back to the other room. And I literally remember, like, my mom coming home and hearing a scream from the other room as I guess they realized she wasn't breathing. And
those things do not go away. My grandma died in my mom's house on hospice, basically. Like, you know, they'd have a nurse come in and make her comfortable and whatever. And I remember, this wasn't that long ago, but I remember my mom being like, you need to come to the house today. Like, it's probably the end here. And I just remember taking my dog. So Obi was probably not even one. So he was a puppy. And he was like a pain in the ass back then, you know, like, peeing and bark. And I remember, you know, my grandma in the room of my mom's house, like, you know, visiting her and trying to say goodbye and stuff like that. And my dog, like, you know, on his leash, pulling underneath her bed and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, God. And, like, my mom's cousins are there. And there I am sitting there with my dog. And I don't know. It's just awkward. And then I remember my ex-wife. This is a sign of, like, what things to come. I had no idea where she was. I'm like, look, you know, my grandmother, you know, like, my grandmother's dying. Like, you should get it over here, blah, 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 blah. And I just remember her showing up, and like she smelled so bad of what's that? Malibu, like coconut rum. I remember being like,
"Oh, jeez."
I remember like she pulled up like way later in the night, like, and then I remember, oh, God, you've been drinking, and that was like towards the beginning of when I started sensing things were wrong and whatnot. But it's funny how those things stick in my head. I had the puppy and the thing, you know, like. And then someone dying in your house is always it's an interesting thing, man. It's like one of those things like, yeah, I want to die in my house, but like the people that live on in it, it's always kind of weird. Like that's where Scott was, where he, you know, he died in that room. It's kind of tough, you know?
I even remember like when the ambulance came, were giving her resuscitation and every time they would, you know, breathe in, you would hear like gurgles and like, I don't know anything.
Yep.
So at first I'm like, oh, noises are coming from grandma. She's going to be fine. Yep. No, not knowing, no, that's not a noise that's supposed to come from a body or whatever.
Yep.
I even remember I was on the front porch steps, like head down, obviously sad. And like one of the people from the EMT I went to school with. And she just like nonchalant said, hey, Mike, how's it going? And went back into the ambulance. Which I always found like the weirdest.
Gave you like thing. A fist like, bump.
What's up, kiddo?
your grandma dead? Yeah. Give me that. It's all right. It's all right.
Did you know that dead person in there? Man, he's like, we call that ultra dead in there. Man.
Yo, she dead as hell, Mike. She dead as hell.
And if I was in the house with her when she's dead, I'd be scared. Woo!
I remember they sent us all downstairs. Like, they're like, you probably want to go in the basement for this. And that's like when they get the body and put it in the body bag and whatnot. So it was like, ooh, that's pretty dark. You know, like, something about the body bag thing is so, I think it's so permanent. You know what I mean? Like, the other day I heard that my brother-in-law lost his grandmother to COVID. I mean, she was, I think he was 91 or something like that, you know, nursing home, whatever, but long care, you know, health facility. And I don't know, there was something about, like, my mom saying, like, oh, yeah, you know, they can't have a funeral, which is, you know, they all die alone, which is terrible. But then she was like, yeah, they don't even take them out of the body bag. They bury them in the body. And for whatever reason, that was like a disturbing image to me. And if you think about it, you're like, why is this disturbing? Like, we're going, you know, the body's being placed in the ground. Who cares if there's this bag around it? But for some reason, it was like, oof, I don't know. It's kind of dark, you know?
You just envision they're like, well, I can get out of this coffin, but this bag, this is too much.
Kind of, yeah. Like, the zombie thing happens. Like, or like, oh, shit, I'm alive. But God damn it, I can't get the zipper undone, you know?
Damn it, the teeth are unaligned. Damn it, I want to knock on this coffin to say I'm okay.
Right? Like, there is something dark about that, though, right? Like, the body bag just kind of being placed in it. I don't know.
It is kind of freaky. I mean, it harks back to, like, the early Undertaker days where he would beat the opponent and put him in the body bag. And it's like, that's even worse than anything.
It definitely goes back to the Undertaker and Paul Bearer days. That's what I was thinking about when I heard it. I was like, you know, Paul Bearer, what would he think about this?
Oh, yes. Yes. Put him in a bag.
I think
yes, they can't get out.
I think there's something about a body bag that's an awful, I don't know, there's something really dark about a body bag. But yeah, you know, when my brother-in-law's grandma died, I was like, man, The Undertaker and Paul Bearer would be really upset right now. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. And if they were kissing, then Kane would light the house on fire, you know. But I guess going back to the end of how I felt when I found out, I think with everything going, I was kind of numb about it.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things, like, years later, I remembered my dad saying it. It was kind of like, God damn it. No one knows.
Son of a, you know, like.
Like, I remember when I was still in comedy, I was trying to write a bit where I'm like,
I was just gonna
how
say,
good could a 75-year-old lover be to steal from your grandchild?
I was just going to say, the premise of your grandma stealing baseball cards and that story is like comedy gold. There's so much that it would take a while to fish it out and make it relatable to everyone, but it's a story that, you know, you wouldn't go to an open mic and hear someone doing the same thing. Like, that one always had a lot of room to grow. And it's like that one could have been your bit, man. Could have been your closer.
The what ifs, man. I mean, from everything I'm hearing, it's like I have a legendary material, but nope, I had to step away from it all. Had to come down and get my Georgia peaches on.
I think we should do, our Craigslist Facebook dickering challenge. What do you think? Where we find a free item, right? We find one free item, get it. Mm-hmm. And see if we can continuously sell that, upgrade that item for 1 month of time.
I would be down with it. And all I'm as funny as it sounds, I never really did a ton on Craigslist, so I'm gonna have to like review
Facebook Marketplace. Facebook Marketplace is pretty good, but I think it could be fun to weekly check in, like, hey, did you get rid of those? you know, did you get rid of those bricks you picked up or whatever? Like. And what we can do is, like, film each interaction and see who can go from zero to, like, the most amount of money over 30 days. I don't know. We'll talk off the air about kind of putting that in place and what the rules, per se, might be. But, Berlu, I think we got enough here. So, I think it's time to go. Anything to promote before we go?
I guess I'll just promote us as we are joining the RTF Sports Podcasting Network. see us on Discovery Community Network, comingrightup.org. We're moving up in there, and we got a, as we talked about, a lot of upcoming guests that are coming out. We got a really cool guest for number 300 coming up.
We do. Yep.
And I think once in a while, we just got to pat ourselves on the back, you know?
Absolutely. I agree with that. And I will promote a former guest of the show, Chef Eric Levine. He was a chef on Chopped, and he did a bunch of things with Food Network, and he did. I used to host trivia at one of his restaurants and whatnot. He just put out a new podcast called Behind the Wall with Chef Eric Levine. So we're always down to promote some local podcasts, and he's a really interesting guy. He I can't remember how many. I think he survived cancer like 5 times or something like that. It was like a really fascinating interview. And that was a while ago. I can't even, I don't know. I don't know what episode that was, but go just look up Verbal Shenanigans, Eric Levine. But that's it, guys. Other than that, what you can do for us is share the podcast and most importantly, listen to it. And then give us a review on iTunes if you do dig what you're hearing. You know, we try to keep putting out this content during this, and we'll, I don't know, for the foreseeable future, we will put out 2 episodes a week for at least the next couple of weeks. Mike, go ahead.
Episode 147, Eric Levine.
147. So, you know, a decent amount of time ago, but Chef Eric Levine, he's a good guy, he's a good dude. So go check out his podcast, Behind the Wall. And that's it, guys. I want to thank Mike Reynolds. I want to thank Mike Berlew, sort of. And that's it. Life is funny. Laugh at it and keep the wind at your back. Go make an airship. Earthship.